Coming up on KUCB News, Unalaska squares up after a lawsuit with the city assessor, and a new fisherman shares his stories from life on the water. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics. Located in the airport cargo building, Redfish sells computers, Androids, iPhones, iPads, televisions, headphones, and unlocked phones. Business hours can be obtained by calling 359-2205.
Redfish, we got stuff.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Wednesday, June 27th, 2018. The city of Unalaska is shelling out $9,000 to resolve its role in a years-long dispute over property values. Last night, the city council voted to reimburse appraiser Mike Renfro for some of the legal fees he incurred while suing the city last year. The unanimous decision came after several councilors admitted that they made a mistake in overturning his assessment of a lot in the Unalaska Valley. Here's Councilor Dave Gregory.
I think in order to kind of equate the situation and allow us to move forward with a good relationship with our appraiser, that we can split the attorney's fees and move forward.
The court battle centered on property owned by Unalaskan Co. Wittern. Renfro assessed the 11-acre lot at almost $500,000, much higher than the $60,000 that counselors said it was worth when they approved Wittern's appeal. The Alaska Superior Court, however, sided with the appraiser and his argument that the property had been extremely undervalued. Counselors accepted the court's ruling this spring, and their decision to grant Renfro's reimbursement request will help to cover about half of his legal fees. Meanwhile, councilors' public vote on the issue explains why they held a closed-door session to, quote, discuss litigation. Officials had previously declined to comment on the legal matter at stake. President Donald Trump and Senator Lisa Murkowski spoke at the White House yesterday. He boldly predicted that the controversial King Cove Road will be finished soon, even though it hasn't begun. APRN's Liz Ruskin has more on the 2.5-minute exchange between two people who seem to be talking past each other.
It was one of those meetings with a lot of people gathered around a large table. In this case, it was the Republican members of the House and Senate Appropriations Committees. With cameras rolling, Trump asked Murkowski about the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge.
Senator, how's Anwar doing? Okay.
We are moving on Anwar.
Then he spoke about the King Cove Road. In January, his interior secretary agreed to exchange land in the Eisenbeck National Wildlife Refuge for the road corridor. But that's as far as it's gone. Conservation groups are suing, and the land exchange hasn't moved forward. Murkowski told Trump it's important to go through the process. Trump clearly has a speedier timetable in mind.
This is a road that was, I guess it's been, they've been trying to build it for 30 years. We're going to get it done very quickly. It's almost completed.
A second later, Trump seemed to acknowledge there is a pre-construction process.
We're going to get it done, I'd say within the next couple of months it'll be complete, and they can go ahead and build.
The environmental review on the road hasn't begun, and on a controversial project like this, it can take a few years. Pleasantries out of the way, Murkowski spoke about the need for regular order. That's where Congress passes individual spending bills rather than just passing emergency measures to keep the government from shutting down.
But we have got to be able to work with our colleagues on the other side, sometimes as hard as that is. So thank you for encouraging us to do that, because I think that that makes a difference.
It's been a very terrific group of people to work with, I have to say that.
Our colleagues on the other side. She meant Democrats. Murkowski said they need to cooperate with Democrats to pass bills. Trump did not seem to be saying that he had worked well with Democrats. Several times during the meeting, he painted them as uncaring about America's security and obstructionist. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Seabirds are once again washing up on beaches in the Bering Strait region. Communities from Shishmaref to Unalakleet have reported seeing dead birds and birds behaving strangely. Marine biologist Gay Sheffield is helping to collect the dead animals, and she says only one has been tested so far, a murre that died last month in Unalakleet.
The murre was tested for harmful algal blooms, tested for avian cholera, was tested for bird flu, and a full necropsy or little bird autopsy was done, and the result was that the bird had starved to death.
Starvation was also to blame for the hundreds of dead puffins that washed up in the Pribilof Islands in 2016. But knowing that seabirds aren't finding enough food doesn't resolve the larger question necessarily of what's wrong.
They're dying of starvation, but there might be other contributing factors.
Rob Kaler is a wildlife biologist for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service who's been monitoring recent die-offs across the state. He says bird deaths have been caused by neurotoxin poisoning from algal blooms, increased storms, and changes to the forage fish that birds eat. But overall, he says all of those issues are connected to warming ocean temperatures. Officials will continue collecting and testing dead seabirds found in western Alaska. And anyone who spots a dead bird can report it by calling Fish and Wildlife at 866-527-3358. Veteran fishermen and greenhorns alike have flocked to Bristol Bay for the commercial salmon season. KDLG's Austin Fass caught up with one newbie at the Dillingham Boatyard to hear about his adventures on the water.
On a strikingly sunny afternoon in the PAF Boatyard, Jordan Hansen of the fishing vessel Mr. Fox is just getting his feet wet. He's tying cork after cork after cork onto gill nets.
So the corks float and the leads sink, and so that's how it works. But that's just what I've been told. I mean, I don't really know. I've never seen it work myself.
Hansen may be new to commercial fishing, but he's no stranger to the water. After rowing competitively at the University of Puget Sound, he's rowed boats down both the Columbia and the Mississippi rivers. Oh, one more thing. He raced a 29-foot rowboat across the Atlantic Ocean in 2006. That's about 3,200 miles from New York City to Falmouth, England.
We had no idea what the hell we were doing. You know, we were all 23 and had no any kind of deep water experience or yard experience, and we just kind of had a lot of optimism and hard-headedness.
72 days after Hansen's team left New York, they set foot on British soil. They won the race by 10 days, setting a new Guinness World Record for the first unassisted row from the mainland U.S. to mainland U.K. They lost almost 150 pounds among the four of them because they misestimated how much food they need for the adventure. A few years later, Hansen and his buddies were back at it, planning a longer trip from West Africa to Miami. They partnered with the Canadian Wildlife Federation to study the ocean and promote conservation in 2013.
We had tons of scientific equipment on the boat that were soaking up data the whole time.
What kind of data was it?
Temperature, salinity, dissolved oxygen, dissolved CO2. We were running like psychological studies, sleep studies, and testing as many things as we possibly could given that environment and it's the fact that it's extreme.
But it wasn't meant to be. Just east of the infamous Bermuda Triangle, again 72 days into their journey, Hansen says all it took was two square waves at a bad time to capsize the rowboat, putting the four men's lives in jeopardy.
The ocean almost never gives back what it claims. At home, a mother sat and worried for weeks before she got the dreaded phone call.
And the world stopped. Every fear I had come to fruition. My son was gone.
We were on Dateline. If you Google Dateline and capsize, you can see their dramatic rendition of capsizing.
Hansen really downplays the danger here. He says the U.S. Coast Guard diverted a car carrier to rescue them just 12 hours after capsizing.
The boat could handle big rough water. It's just that these two waves that hit us were kind of funky. They hit us like a 1-2 punch. We were in the middle of shifting people in and out of the cabin, and by the time I saw the wave and by the time we were in the water and everybody was okay, it was like between 10 and 15 seconds. We had all the right tools, so we had four PLBs, one on each of our life vests. We never really had to deal with a lot of fear because we knew things were working. I mean, if we'd been out there another 24 hours, I think it would have completely changed the game. But the scariest part of that night was climbing from the life raft up a 45-foot rope ladder, like 6-foot seas, into this car carrier.
Even though that ladder made him nervous, Hansen says rowing across the ocean isn't as deadly or dangerous as people think.
The majority of the time, it is really, really chill. It's a lot of work. It's very consistent. But you get to see the ocean and all of its flavors. And you're going so slow that it's really hard to miss things.
Among those things, Hansen describes a super pod of dolphins. What looked like a line of whitewater crashing over the horizon turned out to be thousands of animals rushing past.
I mean, they were everywhere. They were as far as we could see. You could look down into the water and you could, like 15 feet deep, you could see it just stacked with dolphins. And it was loud. You could hear them, clicking and chirping to each other. And it was, an overwhelming experience of wildlife. It was like being in the middle of a stampede.
Another time, Hansen slipped in the water to swim alongside pilot whales the size of a school bus. Flying squid flopped down on the boat as a welcome addition to their diet. Quick fried in a bit of coconut oil, they turn out to be pretty tasty, he says. And without light pollution, a beautiful nighttime rainbow, or a moonbow, spread across the sky after a squall. Hansen says that's the most profound thing he's ever witnessed. He's looking forward to getting out on Bristol Bay for a very different adventure.
Here I am. It's something I've wanted to do for years. I've heard about this fishery for a long, long time, and it seems really fun and challenging. I mean, there's something like an athleticism around it, like a race-type vibe that you can kind of see.
And around him, as he says this, deckhands all over the boatyard are putting in hours, preparing for the days they'll be picking fish out of nets for 24 hours or more while they're out on the bay. Hansen says it's a privilege to, quote, choose your hard.
People are happy when they're doing things that are challenging in one way or the other, and especially if you can choose it. And it's, if you challenge yourself consistently doing things that you like, when you don't have a choice, when something's really hard and crappy in your life, then you can take some of those lessons and apply it to that. Everything seems just a little bit more important when you're on a boat and you're surrounded by water, because things really, they really, really matter.
And there's no doubt Hansen will absolutely find that challenge he craves out there fishing Bristol Bay. For KDLG and Dillingham, I'm Austin Fast.
And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.